This is ESPN Radio.
Fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. We want you to get at us on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, we got to react to the news around college football. Not only did we have the college football playoff rankings come out, but we also got to see the introductory press conference from your former head coach, Brian Kelly. And I know when you did the rankings reaction show last night with Christine Williamson and Jason Fitz, one of the things that you said you were proud of is how the leadership, the guys in the locker room, and the coaches that are on staff there seem to be holding it together in the wake of losing Brian Kelly in terms of this group staying focused on the task at hand, which is bowl season, and potentially having a chance to compete for a national title.
Yeah, and I think as we all talk, and understandably, about what's going to happen, Notre Dame at number 6 in the latest round of rankings, and if a couple of key losses happen this weekend, could very much be in the mix. But we know that head coach, or lack thereof, might be used against him here. It just, Chris, from what I've talked to and guys on the inside, just hearing anecdotally around the program, it is an incredibly focused group of guys that, whether it is a CFP or whether it is the New Year's Six, I have a feeling are going to be more ready for this than most teams in their situation should be. And that's a testament to what they've built, certainly what Brian's been a part of in 5 straight 10-win seasons. But you know this, the best locker rooms are led from within, and I think I underestimated just what the DNA looks like for a group that has had 5 straight 10-win at least seasons, and what goes into that in a day-to-day basis of the habits these dudes have built.
Yeah, I mean, winning is a habit. Unfortunately, so is losing. That's the old Vince Lombardi, and it's clear that Brian Kelly put a culture in place that allowed this program to have 5 straight double-digit win seasons. But to your point, what Gary Barter insinuated last night in the press conference and talking about the latest rankings, that a head coach could potentially be, absence of a head coach could potentially be used against you in the final rankings, although it didn't play a part this time around. Let's go to that sound. Let's go to Gary Barter and what he had to say last night about Brian Kelly, potentially the absence of a team's head coach going into the final rankings.
Committee obviously was aware of all the coaching changes while we were going through the rankings. This week, it didn't apply because the games had occurred and we evaluated based on those games. Once the championship games wrap up, to your point, our protocol does include the ability for the committee to consider a player or a coach not being available, and should that have an effect on the outcome of a game, that can be considered. At this point, we'll have to wait and see how that factors in, but it is one of the criteria that's now added to strength of schedule, to head-on-head competition and winning championships, etc.
Yeah, Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter, who does an outstanding job covering the CFP, pointed this out. That was not always in the language, Chris. She believes it was largely added last year in the middle of the COVID season, where you could have had a coach test positive and be unavailable for a team in a given week. And so if you're the committee considering that, you'd say, all right, well, if Michigan played Ohio State, but one of the coaches wasn't on the field, we could factor that into how this plays out here. And I know that's going to be the headline, and I've seen everyone, and I understand, and I really appreciate, like, the way people look at this and try and focus on the players and say, these guys have poured their heart and soul into this. Why are they having this held against them in this spot if they've really got a chance to do this? The only thing I would pour a little bit of cold water on that with is, I think it's going to be so much less about that, Chris. That's if, like, everything's razor thin and the margins are all equal besides that.
Yeah.
Notre Dame doesn't have a win against a current top 25 team, according to the CFP's last round of rankings. They don't have a chance to make that any better this weekend, and they didn't really down the stretch of the season. So I think all of those things are going to factor in a lot more than the head coaching situation. Then, who knows, could be resolved well before then, depending on how quickly this coaching search for Notre Dame goes off.
Yeah, and I hear you on that, but it feels awfully punitive to the kids, the fact that the committee would weigh something like that, knowing that the program or the student-athletes have no control over whether or not Brian Kelly's going to stay there. So I'm with you on that, but at the same time, it's just kind of like, this is one of those where, since the committee put them up there, knowing that their strength of schedule was what it was, knowing that they didn't have any wins against any top 25 teams as far as the rankings were concerned, I mean, the selection committee still decided to put them at 6 and they're within striking distance, given that all the teams that are in front of them are playing on conference championship weekend. And we know that at least four of those teams have the potential to get knocked off and Notre Dame sliding into one of those spots. So, I mean, if one happens, there's still a possibility. If two happens, I think there is a strong likelihood that Notre Dame can backdoor their way into this thing. But again, when we start talking about trying to parse between, you know, a two-loss non-conference champion versus a one-loss Notre Dame team, I don't know, man. I just hate that the deciding factor would be Brian Kelly's absence in all of this.
Yeah, listen, if I were a betting man, I'd say by the time we get to Selection Sunday, I could imagine that not being a problem for them anymore. But as it sits right now, that's going to be one of the things that gets talked about on all of this. And I understand the frustration that's going to come with that. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And so for everyone else that plays, because you're right, all it would take, Georgia beat Alabama, Oklahoma State get upset by Baylor in the Big 12 championship game. You've got your opening in that. I think the Michigan-Iowa upset is a lot less likely, but it is still a thing that could make all of this possible. But what really made all of this possible is the move that happened in the heart of this. Brian Kelly announced as the next head coach of LSU today. He did have his press conference earlier today. We do have sound of that. If Brian Kelly talking about what convinced him to take the job down in LSU and start all this conversation in motion.
When you get an opportunity to talk to Scott Woodward and he presents a clear vision of the plan here and the opportunity, it was an exciting vision for me to look at. And as I got a chance to, you know, speak to more people about this opportunity, I just felt it was something that I had to take on.
That was now head coach of LSU, Brian Kelly, apparently covered in buzzing bees. But Chris, like, we all know what convinced him to take the job here. Brian was going to get up and say all of the right things in the press conference today, and that's who he's going to be down there. He talked about going and, you know, learning more about the state of Louisiana, since so many people seem obsessed with the fit and the cultural fit down there. Like, listen, I think it's probably going to be harder than everyone involved thinks it's going to be, Chris, but I do know and believe in Brian Kelly's ability to kind of survey whatever room he's in and figure out how to fit it best.
Yeah, I think he's proven that he has a certain level of awareness. And let's remember this. I mean, he did coach at Notre Dame. That's a national recruiting type of program. Like, you're going into living rooms and talking to families all over the country. So I don't necessarily look at that as big a deal as some people are making it out to be. But the one thing that I will say is, for Brian Kelly, I don't think this is about money. I think the motivation for him was about being able to consistently compete at the highest levels of the sport and actually have a chance to win a national championship. Like, he won a national championship at the Division II level at Grand Valley State, but to actually have a chance to win it at this level, the highest level of the sport, I think that's something that matters to him. And in this scenario, this gives him a chance to close the talent gap when it comes to competing against teams like Alabama, competing against teams that were, you know, considered to be like teams like Georgia, like Michigan. Like, this gives him an opportunity to close that gap. So for me, I think this is more about him trying to eliminate the excuse as to not winning a national championship because of the talent disparity, and more about, okay, I've got a chance now because I've got the same type of players. Now it's all about my coaching ability being able to be highlighted and coming to the forefront. So I think that's what the motivation is. And I got to say, Gojo, I kind of respect it. Even though I don't like the way that he left Notre Dame, I kind of respect the motivation behind the decision.
Well, I mean, and the money.
Oh, man, it's not about the money. Come on, he can make the money.
Make that much money elsewhere? I think a lot of it's still about the money, and that's okay, too, to be part of the calculus of this decision. Like, I am certainly not going to judge that. Like, in all of this, Chris, the conversation that we're going to have going forward about what the College Football Playoff Committee and the powers that be should do about this, is this good for college football type stuff? Like, the one thing I really don't begrudge is coaches going out there and getting money. I just get mad when people then, out of the same side of their mouth, come back and get mad when players sit out bowl games or players try and transfer for the best opportunity. Like, we can have both, but it's just so traditionally been we can only have one and then not the other for the people with far less advantage going their way in the players.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And maybe if Brian Brian Kelly who stayed and not being able to add a national title on his resume, he wouldn't be able to leverage Notre Dame for more money. But it's not like Notre Dame has any shortage of cash around there. Like that school prints money. So it's not like they couldn't ante up and, you know, give Brian Kelly a salary that's competitive with the best coaches in all of college football. But the reality is that LSU is more desperate at this point in time than Notre Dame. So the financial commitment is going to look a whole lot different. Only thing I would say is this. I think the motivation for Brian Kelly is much more about trying to prove to himself and others that he's one of the greatest coaches in the sport. And adding that national title to his resume, I feel like that's the finishing piece. Because you're talking about somebody that's 60 years old. So this is the end game for Brian Kelly when it comes to college football. And this is when he wants to add that final piece to say, yeah, I belong amongst the greatest coaches in college football history.
It's just a reminder, too, as you said that. And Brian is 60, and this is for sure something that a coach would do at the end of his career. Nick Saban is 70 years old and still seems like he is going to be out here caving our heads in for another 5 or 6 years. I mean, hell, that's probably being generous to the rest of us here. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Reminder, speaking of college coaches, Lincoln Riley going to join Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max tomorrow at 8:30 a.m., the newly minted head coach of USC. Coming up next, though, did Bing Bong and the Knicks get hosed by the refs last night? And what the hell's Tom Thibodeau going to do about it? We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we had a couple of big-time NBA games last night with the Knicks taking on the Nets over in the Barclays Center and the Suns and the Warriors tangling up. And we got to start with what happened in the Knicks game. And, of course, I'm going to call it the Knicks game even though the Nets won because the Knicks run the town when it comes to basketball in New York City. But one of the things that you know, kind of got a little spicy, kind of got a little controversial in that game was the officiating. And, of course, if we're talking about an NBA official that has problems and that gets criticized often, we're talking about Scott Foster. And so his crew got caught up in the mix yesterday because Julius Randle had something to say about how the refs officiated the game. So here's Julius Randle and Tom Thibodeau going off about the disparity when it came to the foul calls in last night's loss.
I don't know what they're watching or what they're seeing, but you got to ask them. But like you said, as aggressive as I played, attacking the paint, you know, I can't be penalized for just being stronger than people. And that's an answer that I got today.
I want to watch the film, but something's not right. Like, I don't, you know, I'm watching what's going on both ways. And, you know, hey, look, they're a good team. They played well. But I know Julius is driving that ball pretty darn hard. And I'm pissed.
So, Chris, we do have one update on the officiating situation last night, which, like, take a moment and pour one out for fans of basketball who wanted to be able to talk about this game just for what it was, a two-point finish between two teams in New York. And instead, we get to read the two-minute report today, where the NBA says the referees made the right call on Mitchell Robinson. They whistled with him for a foul on James Johnson, that one with 2 seconds left to play. The league said the refs missed two calls in the last 2 minutes, including one on Julius Randle. All other calls or non-calls were correct, according to the NBA. I don't think Tibbs and Julius are going to be happy with the admission of one call in there. Because, Chris, this seems like a bigger battle for legitimate protection for the guy that they're trying to make their star of that team. He might not be relative to the rest of the league, but at least for the New York Knicks, they know this is a long game for him, and they got to keep this up now.
Yeah, what the NBA is trying to do with the two-minute report and saying that it was the right foul call on Mitchell Robinson because that seemingly decided the game. We're giving James Johnson those two free throws. But, I mean, the game was decided the way that they called it. I mean, the Nets had 25 free throw attempts to the Knicks 12. And a big complaint that Julius Randle and Tibbs had was how they were not calling fouls when Julius Randle was being aggressive and trying to get into the paint and get into the rim. And so if you're going to influence the way that Julius Randle has to play or has to go about his business, that's going to affect what the Knicks' plan of attack, what their strategy is going to be on the offensive end. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be a problem. It's going to put them at a disadvantage, especially going up against a Brooklyn Nets team that has Kevin Durant, who happened to score 11 points in the final 6 minutes of that game, and then James Harden, who drops 34, 10, and 8. Like, this is a situation where you put them at a clear disadvantage by how you officiated the game. And Tibbs went on to say in the post-game press conference, whether you call the game loose, whether you call it tight, that's fine. It's just got to be called the same both ways. And it was clear that last night Scott Foster's crew didn't do that. So they do detract from the entertainment value and the conversation in the aftermath of that game, because so much of the focus is on the officiating when we should be talking about how good Kevin Durant looked in the second half and James Harden seemingly being back after watching him and what he did last night in his performance.
It should be the case. You're right. And between that, the nightcap that we had last night, it should have been a banner night for NBA basketball, especially because it is Wednesday, and Lord knows Wednesday during the football season, we are always looking for stuff to talk about. But instead, we have to end up with the refs. And now, because you missed your chance, NBA, this is what we've got to do. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet's hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit Progressive.com. It wasn't tell you that, although that is important information for protecting your furry friends in your life. But no, coming up next, since the NBA wanted to make it all about officiating last night with Scott Foster and his crew, now we have no choice. It's time to power rank NFL teams. We got to do it. We got to tell you who the best are. We will do that after we tell you about one of the best of all time. The Man in the Arena. Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady's meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. It's a companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries. The 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effect of Tom Brady's career, things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hate, perfection, the game, and more. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Is a toe going to hold Aaron Rodgers and the Packers back from being the number one spot? Find out next. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want you to hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, since we're both committee members for Jason Fitz when he goes to power rank the top six NFL teams, we figured that we might spin off of that since it is week 13. It is moving time for the NFL teams that consider themselves contenders, and we might need to run through our very own top five. We know that ESPN.com does their power rankings as well, and so I figured this would be a good spot for us to kind of run down the list, take a little inventory on who we think the best teams are in the National Football League.
Yeah, for anyone that missed it, Jason Fitz has decided to do the NFL Playoff Committee, much like the College Football Playoff Committee, where you look at the top teams, you're looking at things like strength of schedule, common opponents, head-to-head wins, all these things, and trying to factor this and vote on it. Chris and I, honored to be esteemed voters and members of the committee. And so, as Jason mentioned when he was on with us yesterday, wouldn't it be nice if we put cameras in the committee room and had to listen to the members? And so, we thought we will do just that as we kind of look through and tinker with this before we got to give him our rankings again next week. So, Chris, give us the top five that you got right now. You put this out on your Twitter account and your Instagram account at Chris Canty 99, every week on Wednesday. So what do we got in the top five?
All right, so starting at number five, I got the Kansas City Chiefs. Number four, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Checking in at three is the New England Patriots. Number two, Arizona Cardinals. And the number one spot, the Green Bay Packers. What you got?
We're relatively in the same spot, Chris. Okay. I went Dallas Cowboys at five. I had New England Patriots at four. Tampa Bay Buccaneers at three, and then the same top two, the Arizona Cardinals and the Green Bay Packers. Because, Chris, that top-end conversation feels easy enough to me, right? For the Green Bay Packers, Yeah, they've technically lost two of their last five, but they were missing Aaron Rodgers in that game against Kansas City. We know some of the stuff they've dealt with on the COVID front with him. That's a damn good football team that we saw wax the Rams this last weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, listen, Green Bay's defense has shown up to the party in ways that we haven't seen in the past, and it feels like they're the perfect complement to what Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense is doing under Matt LaFleur. So Green Bay is a true title contender. I don't know that you can see it any other way. And given the division that they play in, it seems like right now it's all about them trying to position themselves to get that number one seed in the NFC. And also keep it in mind, they got the head-to-head tiebreaker against the Arizona Cardinals. So that's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on as we move down the stretch. Now, the point of contention that you and I have is the number three spot, and you've got Tom Brady's current team, and I've got Tom Brady's former team. Listen, the New England Patriots have won six straight, and had it not been for that overtime loss to the Dallas Cowboys at home, we'd be talking about eight straight. And I've been saying it for weeks now, that defense for the Patriots is very reminiscent of the 2001 defense where they had playmakers on all three levels. I know we still have to see a little bit more from Mac Jones. You consider him a glorified game manager, but this team just keeps stacking wins, and I feel like I can trust them in a way that I don't necessarily trust the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, especially when you start looking at what they got going on the defensive side of the ball.
Chris, I'll say this. A lot of this is based on what we've already seen, some of the things from last year, because you're right, New England has been dominant. But I saw that little bit of spark in the last game, that win against the Colts, that looked more like the team from last season, especially the postseason run. 17 for 100 yards and three touchdowns on the ground for Leonard Fournette.
Playoff Lenny, let's go.
Lombardi, they finally let Lombardi Lenny go out there and do his thing. And I feel like that's going to be so pivotal for Tampa down the stretch because of what you mentioned. The back end to that defense, while they got Sean Murphy bunting, I believe, back out there and starting to work again, that unit's not going to be whole again during the portion of this year. They're going to rely on Vita Vea and that rush defense up front. But, Chris, at some point, like we've seen with a lot of teams this year, relying on that ground game might be the difference. I've seen them put the ball in the basket at the highest level, so that's why I would have them just right above the Patriots, and I have it three.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers can run the football, and they can stop the run. So I think those are two critical things that you have to factor in when it comes to playoff success, and they've got Tom Brady as well. So I get it. If that team can find a way to morph back into the identity that we saw late last season, where they were heavy in the run game and then utilizing shots and play action off of that, then that gives you a chance to control time of possession, and you protect that defense that's a little bit shorthanded on the back end. Now, the one I got to ask you about, the Dallas Cowboys, man. How are the Cowboys still in your top five after losing three of the last four games that they played in? Just how, Mike? How is that even possible?
Listen, I have to give an homage to the actual College Football Playoff Committee, right? Because we also did just see head-to-head not too long ago between the Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs that you have at five on your list. But much like Michigan and much like Michigan State, where we had the Spartans get the win and then a week later the Michigan was ranked above them, I got to look at this and do some projecting of my own and say, all right, Tyron Smith out there healthy, going to get Amari Cooper back in this situation, more of a commitment to the ground game. I still see more in the bones, and on the other side, I have a lot more trust in what Dallas has on defense still, I think, than I do for Kansas City right now. We saw it in spurts with Kansas City, with Chris Jones moving back inside and looking like the dude again, but Micah Parsons is something fierce. Like, they're starting to elevate him from defensive rookie of the year to potential defensive player of the year conversations, Chris. That I can bank on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Micah Parsons is a beast, and they've got some studs on that Dallas Cowboys defense. But I will say this, the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs are trending in the right direction. During the four-game win streak, they've allowed 17 points, 7 points, 14 points, and 9 points. That's it. Like, their defense is essentially going out there each and every week and pitching a shutout, and their offense still hasn't quite figured it out yet, Mike. And we know that if you give them enough time, they will, because they have Pat Mahomes, who is one of, if not the best quarterback in the sport, and you've got Tyreek Hill, who is the fastest player with the ball in his hands in the NFL, and you've got an all-time great tight end in Travis Kelce. So I just have confidence that that group, under the tutelage of Andy Reid, under his coaching staff, they will figure it out, and they will play their best ball as we move down the stretch. Because let's face it, we haven't seen the best that the Kansas City Chiefs have to offer. We can't say that we're necessarily certain we haven't seen the best from what the Dallas Cowboys can be. Just saying.
I still think if they get their top three receivers, and we know it's been Cedric Wilson out of the lineup now, Amari Cooper been out of there before, injuries there, like CeeDee Lamb is the lone soldier out there, and even he got injured in the last game. And so I just think there's been a lot of shuffling there. There's been a lot of shuffling up front on that offensive line. The Dallas Cowboys, we talked about this Thursday night matchup and the critical importance of getting your guys out on the field and starting to show reps of the team that I believe can be the top five team as we head down the stretch here in the NFL season. So we'll have all this worked out by the time we got to get these votes to Jason Fitz coming up here very soon.
We hope.
That is true. Like, Jason took last week off for some reason because he was tired. Like, Chris, like, how are we supposed to play with a teammate like that who all of a sudden just decides he can go over take a water break whenever the hell he wants?
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, he enlisted us a few weeks back, and we gladly obliged, and now he decides that we're just not going to do it 1 week. What happened to the consistency? I mean, listen, Bill Parcells used to say he wanted the same guy every single day. We're not even asking for it for every single day from Fitz. We just want it every single week in terms of being able to get our selections in so the committee can come to some kind of consensus on who the best teams in the NFL are. That's all we're asking for, Fitzy. That's it. I don't feel like it's too much. We're being good teammates. We just want him to reciprocate by being consistent, being accountable. That's not too much to ask.
No, accountability is the baseline that we ask for around here. It is not too much. We keep a very low bar for Jason, and in this case, he tripped over it, mostly because he cannot jump and he has got very, very tight hamstrings. So, shout out to Jason Fitz for being ready on standby today in case the booster shot took your boy out here. Feeling good, going strong towards the finish line. We love you, Fitzy, the commissioner of the NFL Playoff Committee, on hand and probably listening to us like the rest of you should be, driving around on ESPN Radio. Coming up next, though. Speaking of what to listen to, as we've seen everyone's Spotify year-end wrap-up playlist, the artist people have been downloading and listening to the most, we will talk about the worst musical decision and comment made in the NFL world next on ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appeared via the Goodyear Hotline. Got to give a shout-out to the guests that came through on the show today. We had SEC Network analyst Peter Burns, and of course the co-host of Best Week Ever. We had 6 p.m. SportsCenter host Elle Duncan, and you know she does the First Take, Her Take podcast as well. And then ESPN NFL insider Jeff Darlington dropping through to give us the news and notes as we head into Week 13. If you missed any of it, go to the Kenny and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, subscribe. You know we appreciate that. But Gojo, we have now reached the portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out. So without further ado.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
Three and Out is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. And, boy, oh boy, this is an easy way to be on the outs with Mike Tomlin. Again, the author of one of the greater quotes, never say never, but never. When he was asked about this, I feel like his head was about to explode. Wide receiver Chase Claypool, when asked about what the Steelers might change up after another gut-wrenching loss, mentioned, you know, maybe the Steelers play music at practice, make the experience a little bit more fun here. Mike Tomlin responded by saying, quote, Claypool plays wideout, and I'll let him do that. I'll formulate the practice approach. That is the divisional labor that I think is appropriate. I believe we have that sound here from Mike T.
Claypool plays wideout, and I'll let him do that. I'll formulate the practice approach, and I think that divisional labor is probably appropriate.
Probably. Cam Hayward, their star D end and their captain, came out and said, I hope he was kidding, because as soon as he said it, I was literally about to rip the speaker out. That is not what we need right now. It's X's and O's and execution. That's a learning experience for the young guy.
Yeah, I just don't know where Chase Claypool thought the win was going to happen when he made that statement. Like, for the month of November, you played four games and you only won one of them, and you tied a team that hadn't won a game all season in the Detroit Lions, and you were at home. So I don't understand exactly where Chase Claypool is coming from when talking about we need to have more fun in practice and you need to play music. You know what's fun in Pittsburgh? Winning games and going to the playoffs. And right now, they're in the cellar of the AFC North. So, I mean, when we start talking about this Pittsburgh Steelers team, I think we have to call into question the culture and the vibe in that locker room, because it is not one that's familiar to me, nor is it familiar to people that played in the early 2000s or really in any ever of Pittsburgh Steeler football. Like, this is something different. And for a young wide receiver to be out of pocket and to say that we need to be having more fun at practice when your team is 500 through the first 11 games, that sounds utterly ridiculous. So, Chase Claypool, you need to chill out. Mike Tomlin handled that just about as well as he possibly could have without blowing a gasket.
When I went to training camp with the Steelers in 2013, they had gone 8-8 the season before. Everyone around said that was the most physical training camp they had ever seen under Mike Tomlin, because that man was so furious about going 500 that season. There were full pads and knee braces in professional training camp. That is how ticked off Mike T was. So this probably isn't the guy to mess around with when you were on the verge of being his first losing season. What's worse than that, though? Let's go to the NHL, where we've got a biter. Los Angeles Kings forward Brendan Lemieux has been suspended 5 games for biting Ottawa's Brady. I am not going to try and pronounce that. Matlack, Kachuk. How do you pronounce that guy last name? Is that a Kachuk?
That's a Kachuk.
Oh, that's a Kachucklehead. Kachuk? Yeah, Kachucklehead. Yeah. There's two of them
Brady
in the league.
Kachuk. All right, how about that? It's been a while since I've seen a Kachuk. The NHL announced the discipline Tuesday night for Lemieux, who will forfeit $38,750 in salary while under suspension. The league posted the video and release on the NHL player safety page on Twitter. This is what a great line I get to read right now, Chris. The bite happened late in the third period of the Kings 4-2 win last Saturday night at the Staples Center. Lemieux was prone on the ice and wrestling with Kachuk and a linesman when he bit Kachuk on the right hand. What a world.
I mean, isn't this one of those things you're supposed to learn when you're in kindergarten? Like, you don't bite people when you have conflict. Like, I get it, in hockey, they seem to let the players go. And if you want to get into fisticuffs, that's all well and good. But it seems like you violate somewhat of a code or an unwritten rule that they have. Like, if you have an issue and you want to get into an altercation or a fight, you square off like any normal man would. You don't resort to biting people on the ice. Like, that just seems like it's utterly ridiculous. And yeah, I'm not mad at Brady Kachuk for trying to call Brendan Lemieux to the carpet for this one and saying that it's a joke, because it absolutely is. Like, I mean, the last time we seen biting in professional sports was when Mike Tyson bit Holyfield's ear off. Like, we know that that has no place in professional sports. So for Brendan Lemieux to take those tactics, man, like, it's just, like, what are you doing, bro? Like, what are you doing? I have so many questions. I'm not sure that I'm going to get any kind of rational explanation or answer from him, because it's utterly ridiculous that he's biting people and he's playing professional hockey.
I'm just glad he bit him on the hand here. Matt, like, do we have the exact quote and response from Kachuk on this one?
Yeah, after the game, Brady was really taking this well. He goes, this guy's, should I do it in the Canadian accent?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
This guy's such a joke. He shouldn't be in the league. This guy's gutless. No other team wants him. This guy, he's going to keep begging to be in the NHL, but no other team is going to want him, and he's an absolute joke. Can't even wrap my head around it. People don't even do this. He's just a bad guy. It's outrageous. Kids don't even do that anymore. Babies do that.
Babies do that.
That might be the best part there. I don't even know what he's thinking.
Wrong.
Just a complete brickhead.
Just a gutless and a complete brickhead. Chris, if those weren't the hockeyest insults of all time, I don't know what is. An outstanding rendition by our own Ryan Matlack, the host of On Thin Ice,
what
here at ESPN
joke.
Radio. Gutless.
I just wonder, do the guys around the NHL red dot Brendan Lemieux now?
Like, oh, is that it's got to be. It's got to be on site, right?
Yeah, like, I feel like it's just like, this is one of those things that Kachuk is not going to have to worry about this. There are going to be other players on other teams that are going to have his back, because – like I said, you did violate a code, a set of unwritten rules that hockey players have.
I just love all of the hockey mic'd up instances where you see them show up in a game and it is some low, you know, holdover beef like that. And the minute they get out to drop the puck, the guys just look at each other and go, "You ready? Dropping the ice, ready to go here." So
there
I think
you go.
I think biting will earn you a full-blown beatdown, especially in the rest of the NHL regular season. So we are looking forward to whenever that comes up and becomes a part of this reality here, and whenever I learn how to properly pronounce and read Kachuk again, because that was an adventure.
Nailed it.
No problem reading this one. Reminder, tomorrow, USC's head coach Lincoln Riley going to join the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Thursday morning. Stick around here. Spain and Fitz coming up next on ESPN Radio.